Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you've had a great week. Katie, how have you been?
I've been good.
Yeah? What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I had some days off work.
Nice.
I went and I got a snake skeleton.
It's sitting right next to us.
It's staring at you in the face, actually.
I kind of like it. It's really cool.
Yeah.
For those of you who didn't know, Katie has, I think it would be best described as like an oddities collection.
Yeah.
And it's kind of awesome. What else did you get this a few weeks ago?
I got a wildebeest skull.
So awesome.
She is massive.
Yeah.
She's a female. She's massive.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty cool. Her horns are incredible.
Oh, yeah.
All real. Very, it really puts things into perspective. It's crazy.
I got a whole lot of bones.
Yes, you do. You have a whole shelf full of them. And they're all ethically sourced.
Oh, for sure. That is like my number one.
Of
I'm
course.
Not going to buy it if it's not. I like to confirm, double check.
Yeah.
I like to interrogate a business owner every now and again.
Sure.
Like, where are these really from? Like,
naturally.
Sure. Yeah.
Naturally. Cool. Mm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
They are really neat and I'm jealous. It sometimes makes me kind of want to start a little collection.
Yeah.
However, I usually collect live animals, I think is my thing, so.
So we're on opposite sides of the
spectrum.
Yeah,
but you know, it's not, no hate. It's very cool. Like, you got this snake skeleton. I got a new pet last week.
That's right. I did. Little sweetie.
Yeah, so he's a leopard gecko. His name is Bingo, naturally.
I love that.
It just came to me. I was like, driving him home, and I was like, yeah, you're definitely Bingo. So I call him Bingo Bongo sometimes. Mm-hmm. He's really cute. He does not like me, naturally, because he's a gecko.
Him.
Yeah. But, and it sucks because I got him, you know, on, like, a Friday. And then, like, 3 days later, one of my other pets died.
No.
Yeah, Justin.
No.
You didn't know that?
Justin passed away?
Yes, Justin passed away.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Justin was my Pac-Man frog. For those of you, pretty much probably everyone who didn't know that I had a frog, he was the love of my life. He was a good boy.
Google what a Pac-Man frog looks like, you guys.
They, nothing behind the eyes. There is no intelligence there.
Oh, but he was so cute.
He was really cute. I had him for like a year and almost a half, not long at all. So I'm really sad that he passed away. He is in my freezer, so I can bury him.
Oh, that's right, when the ground thaws.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He's wrapped in paper towels and in a bag in the back, so I can't see him. But I might cut that part out. But he's in my freezer.
The joys of New England. This is true crime
New
England. These are the things we got to deal with.
It's true. It's very true. So
I would do the same for Salem.
Of course. Well, of course.
Actually, I think the vet takes care of that. But.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing is, so my parents are going away on a cruise this week, and I have been tasked to go home and watch my cat, our family cat, Tallahassee. She's almost 4. And then our dog, Blackjack, who is 16. he is basically a walking skeleton, if the skeleton crunched every time it moved.
Oh, my God.
And my cousin Maddie is helping out, watch him, so thank you, Maddie. But we had a very realistic conversation where we were like, if he happens to die while you're gone, what should we do? And like, Maddie, don't feel bad if you come in and he's dead, like,
oh,
of course.
Oh my God.
And my mom was like, yeah, you can just wrap him in a blanket and put him in the garage. It's cold enough, he won't decay. And I was like, I hate that you're right about that. Because, like, it's cold enough.
It's so cold.
But I was like, I wouldn't do that. I'm gonna take him right to a vet and get him cremated or whatever. Because I'm not... If it were to happen, I'm not saying it will, but I'm saying he's been supposed to have been dead, like, 4 years ago. He had a stroke 4 years ago, and we were like, this is it. I'm so sad. Goodbye, buddy. And he was like, what are you fuckers talking about?
He's like, psych, bitch.
So he's still kicking somehow. He's incontinent. He wears diapers. And I love him so much. I thought that was so funny. I was like, really, Mom? You just want us to wrap him in a blanket and say, here you go. Here's the cold concrete floor of my garage. The garage you loved so much. Like, what's the...
Right.
Oh, God.
He's gonna haunt the garage.
He's gonna haunt his smell alone. He has smelled like he's been supposed to be dead for years.
He's like decaying internally.
Yes! His teeth are so bad. When he was little, he used to play with rocks.
Oh my God.
And so his teeth just were nubs. And so like a few years ago when it got really bad, we were like, well, he's 11, he's 12. If we put him under anesthesia for dental surgery, he'll probably die. Like, it's not a great chances. And so now it's four or five years later, and we're like, we should have really pulled the trigger on that one. Because you can't eat near him. You can't give him, like, kisses on the head because you're like, I'm going to be sick. Because it's so bad. It is pretty bad. And it's been a while. Oh, no, you saw him in September.
Yeah.
So he's a, oh, God, I love him so much. He is my baby. But my God, he smells like death.
What is fueling him? Because he just is not slowing down.
No, he is an eternal little bastard. I really don't know what's happening. Love him. Love him to literal death. So anyway, it started with talking about snake skeletons, and now we're talking about my living one. So that's...
Jesus Christ. He's so cute, though.
He is really cute. He's a little rat dog, which is why he's still alive, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The size of him.
For sure.
Yep. So anyway, completely different topic change. Let's change directions here.
Sure. Boop. So we decided that we wanted to do a fun little giveaway for you guys. So we'll do something for you if you do something for us.
Hey, wink, wink.
If you guys leave us a rating, bonus points if it's accompanied by a written review. Mm-hmm. You can do this on Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Or if you prefer to listen on Spotify, you can go to the top of our page, True Crime New England on Spotify,
mm-hmm.
and you can leave us a rating.
Yeah. That one you can just do the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And so do that, or like we said, Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm. And then send us proof. So if you guys took a screenshot of your review, your rating on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can send it to us via Instagram DM or through our email,
mm-hmm.
so that more people can partake if you wish.
Yes.
And then in 2 weeks, we're going to announce the winner. That puts us at March 3rd.
All right.
So you might be wondering what the prizes are.
Katie, I think you did a really good job pulling this together, because I think it's pretty cool.
I think I would enter this.
I think I would too, for such a simple, easy task.
Leave us a rating and or a review.
And you could get a free tote bag.
What?
Paired with a free True Crime New England bumper sticker.
What?
And a little True Crime New England pin.
And that's just for first place.
First place.
And this bumper sticker is a big boy.
Yeah, it's a big bumper sticker. Yep.
A big old sticker. Mm-hmm. All of the pictures for all of this stuff, you guys can find it on our Instagram if you're curious as to what these things look like.
Yep.
That's our first prize.
Yep.
Our second prize, we'll send you, we have a little sticker. It's like a horizontal
mm-hmm.
sticker with our logo and then the website.
Yep.
And then you also get one of those cool little pins.
Yeah.
And then for third prize, you get a little sticker.
Yay!
We'll send it to you guys. So send us proof of a review.
You also might be wondering, what if I've already done a review?
Great point, Liz.
That's a really good question. And Katie, how can they still enter this contest?
Well, we decided to be kind.
So kind. That's all we are.
Inclusive.
Yes.
If you have already done us the great service of leaving a review, simply send us a screenshot.
Of it. So now you might be asking, well, Liz, I didn't write a written review. I just gave you 4 stars on Apple Podcasts. Well, if you go back onto Apple Podcasts and hit the stars again, it's not going to send us another one, but it'll show us, like, what you did. So if you gave us 5 stars, thank you very much. Just click it again and it'll, like, say, thank you for submitting or whatever, and you can just send us that. If you did send us a written one, you can send us a screenshot of that too. Say, this was me. A lot of them, they have like your first name on it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I know some of my cousins left some. So like, you guys send us, you still got to send us proof though.
Yeah, proof with your name so we know who you are. And then on March 3rd, we're going to pick the winner. We're going to do it like a random name generator type deal, so it's fair.
Yep.
And then we will reach out to you guys and we'll announce the winner on Instagram.
Yep. And here's how we make it even more fun. If you happen to write us a review on Apple Podcasts along with your rating, you get your name in there twice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't yet, I don't know. I think I would think about it.
And more incentive for a written review, if you write us a really nice one and we like it and it moves us to tears, which some of them have, we will post it on our Instagram story and add it to our highlights for reviews.
We have some really cute ones on there. Mm-hmm. We got some really nice ones like the past few days.
Oh my god, so nice.
I literally like, and we always send them to each other. We're like, Katie, did you see this? And it's so cute and people just, oh, I can't. It really does make it all worth it.
Yeah, you guys are great. So thank you. So we probably do a little giveaway.
Yeah, just, and it's just something to get us started, right? Our first giveaway, 32 episodes in. I think that's pretty awesome. We'll message you beforehand on the Instagram or, you know, if you send it via email, we'll message you then and then we'll post it on Instagram. Yes, so you're not like, sure. You know, so just so you're aware with your permission and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
So get rating, get reviewing, get messaging us with the proof, and yeah, we'll be in touch.
Yes, we will. You got 2 weeks. March 3rd is your deadline, so.
Time starts now.
Time starts now. Do it. Do it. Well, anyway, let's get moving on to our case today.
Love that.
It's another crazy one that, like we often do here, never heard of it before.
No, this was really...
It's crazy.
Something that you would think would be all over the place.
Right? It's a big story. It's a twists and turns and just like, wow, just, it's heavy, I would say would be the best word. So let's get right fucking into it.
Hell yeah.
All right. So without further ado, we will be covering the case of Mark Bouchard. Okay, guys, let's get started, and we'll start it with our sources, as we always do. Katie, if you could tell me what you got.
Sure. I have the Kennebec Journal, Press Herald, AP News, that was a huge one, the New York Times, LA Times, and then UPI.com.
Awesome. I had so many from Bangor Daily News. They are such a great resource for us.
Anything in Maine is like, you can count on them to give us at least something.
Yeah, because this didn't happen in Bangor, but they still had something. It was great. I also had something from Tampa Bay Times.
Okay.
So clearly this reached. I was trying to think of the, is there a past tense? Yeah, like, is there a past tense? So it clearly reached everywhere.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because we've never heard of it. And then also centralmaine.com. So let's get started with this horrible, horrible case. It takes place on January 27th of 1996. It was just after 6 p.m. It was a Saturday, and Mass ended at the Sisters of Blessed Sacrament. It was a convent for, well, nuns. I didn't know the terminology or the, you know, what it was, so... If you didn't know, like me, it's a gathering and a living space for nuns.
It's really sweet. Like, a lot of them, my mom used to take me to one when we lived in Brooklyn and, like, pray with them. And actually it was really nice and very pleasant.
That's sweet.
They live there. They kind of do prayers all day. And it's really nice. And this one was in Waterville, Maine.
Exactly. So
such a nice place.
It is a really nice place. It's a very popular tourist attraction in the summertime. So that's cool. They, you know, they were there, they did Mass, and like you said, they pray all day long, and they live at this convent, so it's pretty cool, you know? So, it was just like any other Saturday, really. They did their Mass, and then they were done, and they were gonna go have dinner, like, they cooked dinner, they gardened, they did all this stuff, so it was just like a normal day. So after Mass, there was a 37-year-old man named Mark Bouchard. He was known to the convent, and he had been attending Mass there semi-regularly in the past. You know, they had knew who he was. So it was after this Mass when suddenly he stormed into the chapel and demanded he speak with the priest. Unfortunately, the priest wasn't there, and I guess that probably made him angry because he really wanted to speak with the priest. He was very, like, forward with it. He was like, I need to talk to him. So when they were like, oh, he's not here, got angry. Just a titchle angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was very clear that something was off with him. He was in a t-shirt, it looked like, and because this is late January and this is in Maine, that's really not proper attire.
Yeah.
We also found out later that he had walked there.
Yeah.
A little over a mile. And he was very determined on getting there.
Yeah. That's crazy, too. They knew something was wrong because it was January in central Maine, and he was wearing a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. That is pretty indicative of some problem.
For sure.
Especially when it's really cold outside. So when he realized the priest wasn't there, he walked right past it and went to the convent next on the property where the nuns lived, physically lived and, like, slept and drank and ate and all that stuff. And he started banging on the door when he then proceeded to break the glass on the door and do that, you know, you see it in spy movies and cheesy movies where they break the glass and just reach in and, like, open the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going crazy. He's on a rampage right now. Because the priest isn't there, is what they're thinking at this point. They're like, okay, this is weird.
But he's really upset. He looks a little stressed out.
Yeah, he's kind of like that. Got that faraway stare. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, this is weird. So immediately upon entering the convent, he found a woman named Sister Mary Julian just hanging out in the kitchen. She was making dinner. She was starting to make dinner, something like that. That was the first room in the convent. Also in the kitchen was another nun named Sister Noreen Thome, who actually managed to get to a phone and call the police when this all happened. So that was thanks to her. I think it got stopped before it was worse.
I mean, thank God.
Yeah.
Because when police arrived,
ugh.
They get onto the property.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, everything seems fine. Why are we called here? And then they were drawn to the chapel area by noises that they heard.
Yeah.
And they walk in and they find three of the nuns bleeding on the floor. And Mark Bouchard is over a fourth holding a Virgin Mary statue as if he's going to bludgeon the nun he's standing over or sitting over.
Yeah.
His clothes are covered in blood and they had to force him off of her.
Yeah.
He was very focused on what he was doing. He didn't even really notice that they came in.
Yeah.
You know, they're yelling, hands up, get off her, get off her.
Drop the statue.
Right. They had to run over and pry him off of her.
Yeah. It was a brutal, brutal scene that they walked into. Terrible. And it was crazy because, like, right after Bouchard had walked in, he proceeded to strangle Sister Mary Julian, mm-hmm. the one who was in the kitchen, and she attempted to get away, and of course she was screaming, stop that, you know, and according to Sister Noreen, the one who was calling the police, she said that she was screaming that until her cries were just stifled, she was unconscious or dead because she just couldn't breathe, he was strangling her so bad. Sister Noreen managed to hide, and this is, you know, when she called the police. But of course, she also felt that hiding wasn't useful.
Right.
So she was like, I need to get out there and help. And when she came out, this had all been very quick, less than 5 minutes, the whole encounter. She saw a terrible sight. Sister Mary Julian on the floor. Sister Mary Anna was also on the floor. And Sister Mary Anna had been stabbed in the face. And it seemed as though she was choking on her own blood.
Oh my God.
I know. Isn't that just... Oh, it gives you chills.
And these are all elderly women. There were 9 of them total that were living in the house. 9 nuns.
Yeah.
And most of them were elderly.
Yeah.
So they can't really run and hide or defend themselves or fight back. It's ridiculous.
These are a very vulnerable victim.
And they're also very peaceful. Nuns.
pretty
laid back. They kind of pray all day, say a couple rosaries,
yeah.
Hit the hay.
They don't even show their hair. They're nuns. You know? They're modest. What did they do to deserve this?
They offer to pray for you. Like,
yes.
They're pretty chill.
And so it's like, if you guys can't already tell, clearly something is wrong with Mark Bouchard. And we'll talk about that. But these nuns, they were just innocent nuns. Had just finished mass. You know? Ridiculous. It just makes you so sad. So like you said, Katie, the police arrived like within 3 minutes. They were so quick and they were drawn to the chapel because that's where there was sound coming from there. It was awful. They found him standing over. Oh my God. Can you imagine walking into that?
Holding a Virgin Mary statue.
Over a nun.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. The woman that he was standing over, Sister Patricia Ann Keene, she had been beaten in the head with a cane until it broke in half and was being striked in the face with the statue, you know, when the police arrived. So what I imagine is he's standing over this nun with the bloodied statue, like, about, like, mid, about to bring it back down.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like something out of a movie. A very bad, scary, sad, anti-religious movie.
For real.
Oh.
You can't make this shit up.
No. It's almost like, if that was a movie, it would be hard to believe. You know, like, that's... Right.
For sure.
Like, did that really happen, or... But no, this really happened.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they took Mark Bouchard into custody, mm-hmm. once he realized, okay, they pried the statue from my hands, mm-hmm. I'm being handcuffed, he was calm, cool,
yeah.
very compliant. He was just very focused in the moment, and he didn't realize what was going on, I think.
Yeah.
So they take him into custody. By the end, Mother Superior Edna Mary Cardozo, she was 68 years old. She had passed away of her head injuries the night of the attack.
Mm.
Sister Mary Julian Fortin, she was 67. She died early the next morning as a result of multiple stab wounds to the face and the head.
Ugh, that's awful.
Sister Mary Anna Giacomo, she was 72. She was in serious condition at Kennebec Valley Medical Center in Augusta, Maine. She had also been stabbed in the face and the head.
Oh.
She ended up surviving.
Yes.
But she was paralyzed completely on her right side.
That's terrible. And she was 72. Can you, like, imagine?
An old woman.
She was probably like 4'9".
A frail little yeah. nun.
Yeah.
And then the last one, Sister Patricia Keene, she was 68 years old. She ended up being hospitalized at Mid-Maine Medical Center, and she died several days later of her injuries.
Mm.
And like you said, Liz, she had been beaten with a cane until it broke in half, mm-hmm. and then she had also been hit with the statue of the Virgin Mary.
According to the police, it appeared that Bouchard had stabbed, beaten, strangled, and stomped on the four nuns.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So he used a knife, that religious statue, and one of the nuns' canes. Just anything he could get his hands on, it sounds like.
Because again, they are elderly, so they have canes.
Yes. A natural conclusion. Right?
Oh god.
Just sickening. Sickening stuff. Now, let's talk a little bit about Mark Bouchard, mm-hmm. because I think for him especially, background is important. Because
absolutely. Before yeah. we all jump to conclusions, let's paint a better picture of this guy.
Yeah. And we don't have a whole bunch, but we have enough to tell you maybe why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, a little bit before this happened, he worked in a tire store that was owned by his parents, and he often attended mass at that nun's chapel, and he had a long, long history of mental illness. That's a very important part of this story. Very important. He grew up in Waterville, graduated from high school in 1976, and he had a passion for the trumpet.
He was amazing.
He was a very talented trumpeter? Trumpetist? Trumpeter.
Trumpet player?
Sure.
Trumpeter?
Trumpeter.
Sure.
Trumpet player also works.
He was great.
He was a good, yeah, he was very talented at the jazz music genre due mm-hmm. to his trumpeting. So that was a small detail. He really was well known and was known to be an accomplished musician. He was even in like a professional jazz combo, which is, I hate to admit, it's kind of cool. And actually, fun fact, he was actually a part of one of the only jazz combos that made money off of their talent in Maine. That's kind of cool,
that's
I guess.
That's really cool, I think.
You know, that's in the 70s, so that's neat.
Yeah, and it was called Joy Spring.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
The jazz combo.
That does sound like a nice, yeah. By his late 20s, though, his mental illness kind of started to get really bad, and that's when he suffered from manic depression and tended to abuse alcohol, mm-hmm. which... I don't think anyone has to say this, but it leads to more instability with a mental illness, unfortunately. So, like a lot of people with mental illness, when you're on medication, you're more stable and it tends to be a lot easier to function day to day. But when he wasn't on his medication, that's when it got really bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you're taking, especially antipsychotics or antidepressants, mixing it with alcohol, especially a lot of alcohol, is really a very bad idea.
Yes, it's dangerous.
It's real bad. Oh yeah. A woman named Ginny Koss, who Mark had met during one of his psychiatric hospitalizations, he had had 9 previous inpatient admissions, which is a fuck ton.
Yes.
That's really scary.
It really is. And, like, it really does kind of speak to the level of mental illness he had. In no way is this an excuse, but it is a factor, for sure.
Absolutely.
And why was he let out of the mental hospital so many times?
That's what I'm saying. I guess he was stable enough to be discharged.
Yeah.
He had been at the Mid-Maine Medical Center on their psychiatric unit. And this woman, Ginny Koss, who had been hospitalized with him,
mm-hmm.
said that he was okay when he took his medication. You know, he's stable.
Yeah.
He's calm. He's pleasant to
talk
to.
He's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, genuinely. But it would really escalate when he skipped his medication, which sometimes he did, or abused alcohol, which he sometimes did. She stated in a later interview, 2 days after the attack, when he stabilizes, he's going to be horrified at what he did.
Oh.
And sure enough, police stated that Mark was coherent during questioning, and he asked about the nuns' conditions. He asked about how they were.
Yeah.
And he stated, "I'm sorry, you know what I did? I murdered 3 nuns."
Oh, that's awful.
And he was beside himself. He was very upset.
Yeah.
He kept apologizing, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry."
Yeah. And that's the thing about manic depression and manic disorders is that when you're in it, you're in it. Like, when you're manic, you don't know what's happening. You're just, like, you're all over the place. And then when you're out of it, you have, like, realization. Like, what the fuck just happened?
You're like, why did I do that? What is the matter? Like, why? Yeah. And you really are not yourself.
Yeah.
And with his manic depression, he had a lot of features of psychosis.
Yeah.
So, in his mugshot after, you can see some bloodstains on his t-shirt. If you look at his facial expression in his eyes, you can tell he really is not present.
Yeah.
It looks to me like he's responding to some kind of internal stimuli, whether it's auditory hallucinations or...
Right.
He just really is not there, and he's really disheveled.
Yeah. I mean, one of the... Not... I don't know if symptoms is the right word, but one of the things, like, with schizophrenia or a manic disorder is, besides what you just listed, is the inappropriate dress.
Yeah.
For some reason, like, it's a pretty big indicator, especially if they're acting manic, and then it's January, and they're walking outside, like, a mile in just a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
That is a really good indicator, okay, something's not right with their brain. It's not because they're hot, it's because they are just manic or schizophrenic. They have hallucinations, they're just not functioning correctly. So, to me, when I read that, I was like, that's a pretty good indicator of what's going on here.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll see, especially people that might be homeless, because a lot of times homeless people have a really big percentage of mental illness. It just, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you will see someone, especially in like New York City or a city setting, there will be someone who is very clearly in a psychotic crisis.
Yeah.
And they're in a full parka, winter coat, scarf, hat, gloves, and it's 95 degrees.
Yeah.
It's really, really bad.
Yeah. It's terrifying. So, not too long before the murders, Bouchard's parents actually had noticed that he wasn't taking his meds, and that he was behaving very erratically. They called the state hotline in an attempt to get him some help, but the time they, when they called, there was a power outage. And they never got to the message. The community health center never got the message.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fact that it was obvious right before that he was going through some sort of psychosis, I think that speaks to the level he was at when this attack occurred.
Yeah. His parents knew that there was something going on. I mean, his behavior was increasingly erratic. And they're noticing, his mom actually said that she had a conversation with him and he sounded very disorganized and he was just kind of rambling.
Yeah.
And he was not speaking coherently.
Yeah.
So she was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's a really
He's
good indicator.
He's not on his meds. This is real bad.
I believe that's called, like, word salad.
It's like a slang,
Yeah. That's what, I mean, I'm saying this to you as someone who takes care of patients that have mental illness way more frequent, like, literally every second of your job.
Yeah.
So, but you know what I mean when I say word salad? Like, it's just, like, it's like verbal diarrhea.
It's not making sense,
And it's, like, just words, like, and then there's, like, clang association, like the dog went to the fog with the bog, and it's just like, you know, all this stuff. So he was doing just a whole bunch of random,
really stressful,
obvious.
And it's really sad because it's like a lot of the time you want to point fingers at, oh, someone knew he was like this and didn't get help, and
right,
they tried to get him help.
Yes,
there was a power outage. Yep. This is the 90s,
and it was the ninth time he had been there. 9 times at this mental hospital. It was known, they tried, and they did get him help. So,
yeah,
we're not making any excuse. It's just...
It sucks.
It sucks.
It's really fucking unfortunate.
It is. It really is. And so, for the trial, Bouchard didn't even enter a plea on the 3 counts of murder and then the attempted murder. He didn't even enter it, anything, because he was, you know, mentally ill. The Superior Court Justice who handled the case, his name was Donald Alexander, found that Bouchard was not criminally responsible for his actions. He said, there's no significant doubt that at the time of the criminal conduct on January 27th, Mark Bouchard lacked substantial mental capacity. He had no relation to reality at all. He had no capacity to appreciate his conduct or its impact. Whatever his mind was telling him in his delusions as he moved about the chapel and the convent, it was to destroy and kill whatever came in his path. So, this is significant. It's not super common that, you know, you can try and do the mentally insane plea.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, it's hard to prove it. For him, it was not.
It's crystal clear.
Yeah,
very obvious. You can just have a conversation with the guy, and you're like, he's in full-blown crisis right now.
Yeah. Very, very obvious.
It's just really sad. So he was committed to the state psychiatric hospital in October of 1996, where he had spent his 9 previous hospitalizations. The nuns publicly forgave Bouchard and continued to pray for him.
Yeah. Which is so... It's in true nun fashion.
The amount of forgiveness, I don't know if I would have it in me.
No. No way.
I don't know especially if I was the sister that called 911 and hid, yeah, and then tried to run out and help and find
this,
your fellow nuns on the floor.
Dead. Beaten. Bloody.
Strangled, stabbed. Yep.
Choking on their blood. I don't think I would either. So, no, I wouldn't.
They're going to heaven.
Yes, they are. Bouchard had a personal attorney. He was a man named O'Donnell. And upon Bouchard's death later in life, he said that Bouchard was probably representative of a lot of folks who have mental illness, mm-hmm, who become psychotic, and when they're provided with appropriate medication and treatment, can live a normal life.
Absolutely.
Of course. And he demonstrated that when he was on his medication.
He was functioning.
Yeah.
He was like, you wouldn't even know. He was like a normal guy. And I think that really speaks to the stigma around mental illness, is a lot of people don't want to come forward and say, hey, I have manic depression with psychotic features when I don't take my meds.
Yeah.
Or, hey, I have auditory hallucinations, or I see things, or I hear voices. And a lot of people don't want to come out and say that because, right, people automatically assume that they're dangerous.
Right.
And that is so not the case.
It's not. It's really not.
And it's really sad that there's such a stigma, like, oh, if you take antipsychotics, you're gonna snap and you're gonna break into a convent and kill nuns, and like that's not how it works.
No, it's not.
And it's really unfortunate for all parties that he had to suffer from this, and he was suffering for a long time before, yeah, he snapped.
20 years,
and it's like that. Also horrible for the nuns, of course.
Of course, it's terrible. And like you even said, they forgave him.
Mm-hmm.
And what's even crazier is that at the trial, some of the surviving nuns testified on his behalf. They showed him so much compassion, which I think is so, God, so lovely.
And they knew, too, that he struggled with mental illness, and they were familiar with him and who he was because, yeah, he attended their services pretty regularly.
Right, right. Oh, the compassion they had. I can't even imagine. I really can't. So, you know, he was sent to that mental hospital, like you said, and eventually he was allowed to move and, like, leave hospital grounds under supervision because he was getting appropriate mental health treatment. He was on medications. He had therapy. He was in a stable living situation. So around 2003, he was able to, you know, be supervised out and unsupervised out in public.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, a little, I can see why some people would be hesitant or not understanding of that privilege he got.
Yeah.
But if you understand mental illness or know anyone with mental illness, that is a big step. So it's like, it puts it into perspective for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He actually moved to a group home in the community in 2012, which blew my mind.
That was really impressive.
Yeah. He had been appropriately medicated. When you're in a treatment facility, you don't have a choice. They're going to medicate you. No matter how much bad you say, the symptoms make you feel like a different person or like you're not yourself, which is a very common criticism of being on medication by these patients, as you know, Katie. So
yeah, especially if you're in a state hospital and he would be there involuntarily, so he didn't really... I mean, you have the right to refuse medication, but I feel like, too, with him, he knew what he did and he felt really guilty.
Yeah.
So he was willing to partake in treatment, as he had been partaking in treatment.
Right.
It's just really sad.
It is really sad.
So he was living in the community under the supervision of Riverview Psychiatric Center's Outpatient Services Team.
Ooh. Shout out.
Outpatient services, amazing.
Yeah, that is really neat.
They really work on sustaining people and,
mm-hmm.
you know, what do you need? How can we help you?
Yeah.
How's your job going? Okay, you have a job, you've rent, you've this.
Right.
Really amazing work.
Yes, and it's very inclusive
mm-hmm.
and very, they believe in their patients and their, you know, patrons. I think that's really important. You know, that's a thing, it's kind of reversing the stigma when that happens, because it's like, yes, people with mental illness can live normal lives. There's just... you gotta learn how to, and you gotta be medicated in therapy, and there's so many resources. So, the fact that they had that, the fact that he had that is wonderful.
Yeah.
In 2016, Bashar did ask the courts if he could move from a group home to a 10-unit apartment building on Commercial Street. The residents there were supervised by at least two people at all times. However, Justice Robert Mullen denied that request and said that Bashard was the kind of person who needed consistent treatment all the time, which I think is fair.
Mm-hmm.
He said transitioning to moving to a new housing would probably be very stressful for him, as it would be for anyone, really. And so he didn't want to, like, chance it and result in a, quote, possible decrease in the predictability of his psychiatric stability.
Valid.
I think that's pretty valid.
Honestly. Makes sense.
Yep. So, in July of 2017, Mark Bashard, who was 58, died of ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. That's what probably more commonly known, which is a progressive neurodegenerative disorder characterized by progressive muscle weakness. Which is it is a really sad way to go.
Oh my God, it's awful because. With him, his case, it had progressed to affect his respiratory muscles and his respiratory tract.
Yeah.
So he was basically suffocating.
Yeah.
But he was at the Hawthorne House Nursing Home and Rehabilitation Center. So with that, they do, you know, palliative care and hospice. And
right.
His death was described as peaceful because he was able to be cared for appropriately.
And what blew my mind is that his funeral, the nuns who were still alive attended his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even...
Like, that's amazing.
That's so... The compassion and the strength of these women...
It's really admirable.
It is. It really is. I don't think I could ever even... I can't...
No.
Imagine. For many reasons. Not even just the nun part. Because I could never be a nun. But how kindly they are and how forgiving.
It really is amazing.
It is amazing.
Some more of the aftermath.
Yes.
Sister Mary Anna Giacomo, she was the one that was paralyzed on her right side. She ended up passing away naturally in 2006.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
What, almost 10 years after?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Good for her.
She'd be in her 80s.
Yeah, she was 82-ish.
Yeah.
Wow.
How cool is
Good
that?
Good for her.
I know. Mark Bashard's parents became facilitators of the NAMI, which is National Alliance on Mental Illness, Mid-Maine Support Group for several years, which was the hospital that he attended.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then John Morris, the commissioner of the Maine Department of Public Safety, he took the job for that position in 2011. And he was the police chief at the time of the incident in Waterville, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
He started the Midnight Team, which is a group of mental health crisis counselors who ride with police from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. to help with a variety of problems. This includes contact with people with mental illness.
Wow.
Because, unfortunately, and you ask anybody in law enforcement, they're going to say this.
Right.
They do not receive adequate training for de-escalation.
Right.
For dealing with people in crisis, whether or not they are mentally ill.
Yeah.
A lot of times, police enter the scene and they end up escalating the situation and it gets really bad.
Yeah.
That's
genius.
I think it's a genius idea.
It really is.
And I think this should be mandatory for every single police department to have a mental health crisis counselor right along with them so that they can de-escalate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's required for me. I have to take crisis prevention and intervention training, which is, like, all about de-escalation and communicating and recognizing when someone's in crisis and how to bring them down.
Right.
I don't understand why law enforcement doesn't have that training.
I think there would be a lot less deaths
so via police. So many people in crisis are shot.
Yeah.
Point blank period. That is not us making that up.
No.
That is not us being dramatic. That's not us shitting on law enforcement. That is fact.
And absolutely.
It's really unfortunate.
It is really unfortunate.
And I feel like this midnight team or something similar, like a similar concept, should be mandatory everywhere.
Agreed. Agreed.
Just would make life so much easier for everybody involved.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's really cool that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually found an article that was really cool about the history of the insanity defense.
Ooh, yeah.
In Maine, which I thought was pretty cool. So the first finding of not criminally responsible was in 1946 in Maine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So between 1946 and 2010, there was a total of 118 people who met that criteria.
Wow.
Yeah. And those crimes range from impersonating a public servant to murder. Two very different.
Oh, wow.
I feel like impersonating a public servant was probably more of like a 50s or like an old-timey thing. Like, because you can't do that these days. since 2000, 12 defendants charged with murder have pleaded guilty to the not criminally responsible charge. This is all in Maine. And only 7 of those cases were deemed insane. So that's actually more than half.
Wow.
So that's interesting, right?
Yeah.
And then there was an article in 2010 that was released in Bangor Daily News that reported that 31 people were in the custody of the Maine Department of Health and Human Services at that time, and that those 31 people were deemed not criminally responsible by reason of insanity. So there's been, you know, I just think those numbers are crazy, you know, from the reasons why they were charged with something to how many over this certain amount of time were found not criminally responsible. That's crazy. It's not super common, but it also happens. It does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this is in Maine is interesting to me because I feel like it's, I mean, it's Maine. It's big in size, but small in population.
For sure.
So it's like, okay, this is, you know. So over the years, at least 34 people who were found not criminally responsible were eventually discharged from mental health institutions.
Oh, wow.
Pretty interesting. 3 of those people were charged with murder.
After the fact?
Uh-huh. No. I mean, like, those were the what they were in for.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. And so, additionally, 19 people who were found not criminally responsible, were they died while in state custody. So there is like a, it's obvious that most of these people stayed in custody and got treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them, they were let go.
Wow.
Yeah. So a member of the state forensic services, someone named LeBlanc, said that the best estimate is that insanity is raised in 2-4% of the cases in Maine and is successful about 25% of the time.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Some very interesting numbers here.
That is really cool.
I'm throwing them out at you.
Yeah.
Here's a percent. Here's a statistic. Have them. I'm a math person. I'm not. I hate math. So an insanity plea to like be able to admit that into court, you can't just be like, right from the get-go, like, I'm just going to do a insanity, I'm going to do an insanity plea, okay? No. You have to have an evaluation of the defendant by at least 2 mental health experts from the state and an additional experts for the defense. And if the DA determines that the defendant is not fit to make rational decisions, then the defendant can be committed to Riverview, which is, you know, what you mentioned, mm-hmm. for up to a whole year. So that's, you know, while they're waiting to do trial. Like, if they think that they're not rational to enter a plea or make a decision, they can be sent in for treatment until they are able to make a decision, like, okay, like, I'm going to plead guilty, I'm going to plead not guilty, that kind of thing, which I thought was really cool.
That is really cool.
So, you know, if they're still unfit for trial after a year, then the state determines that there is a pretty solid chance that the defendant will never be competent and be mm-hmm. able to defend themselves in a court of law. So then the charges are dismissed, but the patient is committed involuntarily, so they have no choice. So I just thought that was really interesting because, like, you know, the stigma for mental illness is so great. It's so vast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it should be clear that we are not making an excuse for Mark Bouchard.
He killed 3 nuns and paralyzed a 4th. Like,
yeah. He did a terrible, terrible, terrible thing.
He's
yeah.
covered in blood in his mugshot. Like, that's real bad.
Oh, and the statue image of him.
Oh, my God.
Bringing the Virgin Mary of all people. She was a person, right?
Rumor has it.
Figure? Okay. Okay, I don't know. I should probably brush up on my Bible skills. Because we seem to talk about it a lot on this podcast for some reason. Literally, what the fuck? But that image is just haunting. So, truly. But he did awful, awful things. But he had a mental illness.
The circumstances around it are more than just right. this guy snapped and killed 3 nuns and yeah. injured a 4th.
You gotta look at the whole story.
For sure.
And, of course, it was 1996, so, I mean, even nowadays, the stigma of mental health is so shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Really crazy stuff, but it's wonderful that he got help and that he was able to be medicated and be more independent in the community, you know, through supervision, but it doesn't excuse what he did. He still was, he did a very bad thing.
Absolutely.
So, that was definitely an interesting case.
Yeah.
Ugh, 4 nuns. Beaten, stomped. It really is terrible. So, nuns are great people, I think, is the conclusion here. The fact that they forgave.
I know.
Those are some holy women, for sure.
They got their ticket to
the big man.
The big man upstairs will be greeting them.
Those pearly gates.
Yeah.
God, they're beautiful. So, crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Man, and if you want to tell us about your religious preferences, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. That was a terrible segue. But you guys know that I love to do terrible segues. So, anyway, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at TrueCrimeNE.
All lowercase.
And you can email us at TrueCrimeNE@gmail.com.
Or you can find us on our website at TrueCrimeNE.com. We have a submission tool where you can use our website to send us stuff. Stories, questions, comments, concerns, preferably stories based in the New England area mm-hmm. would be awesome, so we can potentially cover them on here.
Yes.
You can be anonymous if you so choose. You can put your name if you so choose. Mm-hmm. Either way, we would love to hear from you.
We love it. We love it. We love it. We love it.
And pretty please leave us a rate yes. and or review on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you like to listen, and enter our giveaway.
I think it'll be really fun. I think it's just the start of a future of giveaways and fun things. So the fact that we are able to do that, we're really excited.
Yeah.
It'll be great. And just a reminder, help us keep track of our virtual swear jar, okay?
Oh, true.
So every time we said the F word, mark it down. It's $1 per F word, mm-hmm. both of us. So who knows? We'll keep adding it up until we feel like we have a good amount to donate. 10 episodes, maybe.
I like that.
You know, and just we'll, you know, pick a charity to donate to and just make, you know, small, well, if I'm talking, it might be large, donations to a whole bunch of foundations. And if you guys want to suggest some to us,
yeah.
please feel free.
Yeah, we have a good list going, so we'd love to add more, especially if they're not as well known, because those yes. are the ones that could use the money the most, I feel like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, and with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.